This looks more and more promising. It may very well be a royal tomb, Nahut exulted. Von Schiller pointed to the plaster seals stacked against the side wall where Nicholas and Royan had abandoned them. Nahut fell to his knees beside them and examined them eagerly, his voice trembling as he cried out, "The cartouche of Mamose! And the seal of the scribe Taita!" He looked up at Von Schiller with shining eyes. "There can be no doubts now. I have led you to the tomb as I promised you I would." For a moment Von Schiller stared at him, speechless in the face of such barefaced arrogance. Then he snorted with disgust and stooped to peer through the open doorway into the long gallery. "This has been destroyed," he cried in horror. "The tomb has been annihilated." "No, no," Hanseth assured him. "Come this way. There is another tunnel beyond." As they picked their way through the rubble and wreckage, Hanseth told them in halting, broken English how the roof of the gallery had collapsed and how he, Hanseth, had found the true entrance under the ruins. Nahut stopped every few paces to examine and exclaim over the scraps of painted plaster that had survived the fall of the roof. "These must have been magnificent. Classical work of the highest order." "There is more to show you. Much more," Hanseth promised them. And Von Schiller snarled at Nahut. "Leave these damaged sections now. Time is running out for us. We must hurry on directly to the burial chamber." Hanseth led them up the hidden staircase into the maze of the bear, and then through the twists and turns to the lowest level. "How did Harper and the woman ever find their way through this?" Von Schiller marvelled. "It's a rabbit warren." "Another concealed staircase," Nahut was amazed, and stuttered with excitement as they descended into the gas trap where the ranks of amphorae had stood undisturbed for thousands of years, and then climbed the last flight of stairs to the beginning of the funeral arcade. Now both of them were stunned by the splendour of the murals and the majesty of the great god images that guarded the length of the arcade. They stood side by side, unable to move, frozen with awe as they gazed about them.
"I never expected anything like this," Von Schiller whispered. "This exceeds anything that I have ever hoped for."
"The rooms on each side are filled with treasures," Hanseth pointed down the arcade. "There are such things as you have never dreamed. Harper was able to take very little with him, a few small boxes. He has left piles of goods, stacks of chests."
"There is the coffin. Where is the body that was in the tomb?"
Von Schiller demanded.
"Harper has given the body in its golden coffin to the abbot. They have taken it away to the monastery."
"Nogo will soon fetch it back for us. You need not worry about that, Herr von Schiller," Nahut assured him. As though the spell that held them was shattered by this promise, they started forward together, slowly at first, and then both of them began to run. Von Schiller tottered into the nearest storeroom on his old stiff legs and giggled like a child on Christmas morning as he gazed upon the piled treasures.
"Incredible!"
He dragged down one of the cedarwood chests from the nearest stack and ripped off the lid with trembling fingers. When he saw the contents, he was struck speechless. He knelt over the chest and began to weep softly with emotion too overwhelming to express in words. Nicholas was banking on the fact that Nogo's men would be driving along the cliff tops to reach Taita's pool, and that he would have a free run up the course of the diverted stream to the dam site. He took no precautions against running into them, other than to pause every few minutes to listen and peer ahead. He knew that he had little time left to him. He could not expect the rest of the party to wait for him at the boats and endanger themselves for this whimsy of his. Twice he heard automatic gunfire in the distance, coming from the direction of the chasm down towards the pool. However, the chance he took paid off, and he reached the dam site without running into any of Nogo's forces. He did not, however, push his luck too far. Before approaching the dam openly, he climbed the hillside above it and surveyed the area. It gave him time to recover from the hard run up the valley and to check that Nogo had not left men to guard the dam, although he considered this unlikely. He could see that the yellow front loader tractor was still parked on the bank high above the wall where Sapper had left it. He could also see no sign of any human presence, no armed Ethiopian army guards. He grunted with relief and wiped the sweat out of his eyes with his shirt sleeve. Even with his naked eye, he could see that the water was lapping the top of the wall and squirting through the gaps and chinks between the gabions. Yet from where he stood, the wall still seemed to be holding well, and it would need another foot rise in the level of the backed-up river to overturn it. "Well done, Sapper," he thought, grinning. "You did a hell of a job." Nicholas studied the level of the river and the condition of the waters that were being held back by the wall. The flow down from the mountains was much stronger than when he had last been here. The riverbed was brimming from bank to bank, and some of the trees and bushes at the edge were already partially submerged, bowing and nodding as the swift current tugged at them. The flood was a sullen grey colour, fast and hostile, swirling into the pond of the dam before finding the outlet into the side channel and tearing down it, growling like a wild animal released from its cage, brimming into spume and white water as it felt the sharp fall into the valley. Next, he looked towards the escarpment of the gorge. It was blotted out by banks of dark, menacing cloud that obscured the northern horizon. At that moment, a squall of wind swept over him, cold with the threat of rain. He needed no further urging and started down the slope towards the dam, slipping and sliding in his haste. Before he reached the bottom, the squall of wind had turned to cold rain. It flung needles into his face and plastered his shirt to his body. He reached the tractor and scrambled up into the driver's seat. There was a moment of panic when he thought that Sapper might have removed the key from its hiding place under the seat. He scrabbled for it for a few seconds until his fingers closed over it, and then let out a sigh of relief. "Oh, Sapper, for a moment there, you were very close to death. I would have broken your neck with both my hands." He thrust the key into the ignition lock and turned it to the preheat position, waiting for the coil light on the dashboard to turn from red to green. "Come on," he muttered impatiently. Those few seconds of delay seemed like a lifetime. Then the green light flashed, and he twisted the key to start. The engine fired at the first turn, and Nicholas hooted. "Full mark, Sapper! All is forgiven!" He gave the machine time to warm up to optimum operating temperature, slitting his eyes against the rain as he waited, and looking around at the hills above him, fearful that the sound of the engine might bring Nogo's gorillas swarming down on him. However, there was no sign of life on the rain-swept heights. He eased the tractor into her lowest gear and turned her down the bank. Below the dam wall, the water that was finding its way through the gaps was less than hub deep. The tractor bounced and ground its way through the boulder-strewn watercourse. Nicholas stopped the machine in the middle of the riverbed while he studied the downstream face of the dam wall for its weakest section. Then he lined up below the centre of the wall at the point where Sapper had shored up the raft of logs with rows of gabions. "Sorry for all your hard work," he apologised to Sapper as he manoeuvred the steel scoop of the tractor to the right height and angle before attacking the wall. He worried the gabion he had selected out of its niche in the row, reversing and thrusting at it until he could get the scoop under it and drag it free. He pulled away and dropped the heavy wire mesh basket over the waterfall, then drove back and renewed the attack. It was slow work. The pressure of the water had wedged in the gabions, keying them into the wall, so it took almost 10 minutes to free the second basket. As he dropped that one over the waterfall, he glanced for the first time at the fuel gauge on the dashboard of the tractor, and his heart sank. It was registering empty. Sapper must have neglected to refuel it. Either he had exhausted the fuel supply, or he had not expected ever to use the machine again when he abandoned it. Even as Nicholas thought about it, the engine stuttered as it starved. He reversed it sharply, changing the angle of inclination so that the remaining fuel in the tank could slosh forward. The engine caught and cleared, running smoothly and strongly once again. Quickly, he changed gear and ran back at the wall. "No more time for finesse," he told himself grimly. "From here on in, it's brute force and muscle." By removing two of the gabions, he had exposed a corner of the log raft behind them. This was the vulnerable part of the wall. He worked the hydraulic controls and lifted the scoop to its highest travel. Then he lowered it carefully, an inch at a time, until it hooked over the end of the thickest log in the jam. He locked the hydraulics and thrust the tractor into reverse, gradually pouring on full power until the engine was roaring and blowing out a cloud of thick blue diesel smoke. Nothing gave. The log was jammed solidly, and the wall was held together by the keying of the gabions into each other and the enormous pressure of water behind them. Despairingly, Nicholas kept the throttle wide open. The lug tires spun and skidded on the boulders under them, throwing a tall shower of spray high into the air and churning out loose rock and gravel. "Come on, come on," Nicholas pleaded to the machine. "Come on, you can do it." The engine beat faltered again as she starved for fuel. She spluttered and coughed and almost stalled. "Please," Nicholas begged her aloud. "One more try." Almost as if he had heard him, the engine fired again, ran unevenly for a few moments, and then abruptly bellowed at full power again. "That's it, my beauty," Nicholas yelled, as it lurched and hammered against the wall. With a sound like a cannon shot, the log snapped, and the top end of it flew out over the wall, leaving a long, deep hole through which the river poured triumphantly, a thick, solid column of dirty grey water. "There she blows!" Nicholas shouted, jumping down from the driver's seat. He knew there was not enough time left for him to drive the tractor out of the riverbed. He could move more quickly on his own feet. The current seized his legs, trying to pull them out from under him. It was like one of those childhood nightmares when monsters were pursuing him, and despite his every effort, his legs would only move in slow motion. He glanced back over his shoulder, and at that instant he saw the central section of the dam wall burst, blowing outward in a violent eruption of furious waters. He struggled on another few paces towards the bank before the deep and turbulent tide picked him up. He was helpless in its grip. It swept him away, over the waterfall and down, down into the hungry maw of the chasm. "These are the royal crook and scepter of the pharaoh," cried Von Schiller, in a voice that was gusty and faint with emotion, as he lifted them out of the cedarwood chest. "And this is the false beard and his ceremonial pectoral emblem." Nahut knelt beside him on the floor of the tomb under the great statue of Osiris. All the ill feelings between them were forgotten in the wonder of the moment as they examined the fabulous treasures of Egypt. "This is the greatest archaeological discovery of all time," Von Schiller whispered, his voice tremulous. He pulled his handkerchief from his pocket and dabbed at the perspiration of excitement that trickled down his cheeks. "There is years of work here," Nahut told him seriously. "This incredible collection will have to be catalogued and evaluated. It will be known forever as the Von Schiller Hoard. Your name will be perpetuated for all time. It is like the Egyptian dream of immortality. You will never be forgotten. You will live forever." A rapturous expression crossed Von Schiller's features. He had not considered that possibility. Up until this moment, he had not considered sharing this treasure with anybody, except in his particular way with Uta Kemper. But Nahut's words had awakened in him the old impossible dream of eternity. Perhaps he might make arrangements for it to be made accessible to the public, but only after his own death, naturally. Then he thrust the temptation aside. He would not debase this treasure by making it available to the common rabble. It had been assembled for the funeral of a pharaoh. Von Schiller saw himself as the modern equivalent of a pharaoh. "Nine," he told Nahut violently. "This is mine. All mine. When I die, it will go with me. All of it. I have made the arrangements already, in my will. My sons know what to do. This will all be with me in my own grave. My royal grave." Nahut stared at him aghast. He had not realized until that moment that the old man was mad, that his obsessions had driven him over the edge of sanity. But the Egyptian knew that there was no point in arguing with him now. Later he would find a way to save this marvelous treasure from the oblivion of another tomb. So he bowed his head in mock acquiescence. "You are right, Herr von Schiller. That is the only fitting manner to dispose of it. You deserve that form of burial. However, our main concern now must be to get all of it to safety. Helm has warned us about the danger of the river, of the dam bursting. We must call him and Nogo. Nogo's men must clear out the tomb. We can ferry the treasure in the helicopter up to the Pegasus camp, where I can pack it securely for the journey to Germany.
Yes.
Von Schiller scrambled to his feet, suddenly terrified at the prospect of being deprived of this wondrous hoard by the flooded river.
Send a monk. What is his name? Hansit. Tell him to call Helm. He must come at once.
Nahut jumped up to his feet.
Hansit! He shouted. Where are you?
The monk had been waiting at the entrance to the burial chamber, kneeling in prayer before the empty sarcophagus, which had contained the body of the saint. He was torn now between religious conviction and greed. When he heard his name called, he genuflected deeply, and then rose and hurried back to join von Schiller and Nahut.